used to thinking about God as creator, savior, king, shepherd, and judge. But have you ever thought about God as an investor? Hi, I'm Rob West. It's true, God has another role to play in your life, and I'm excited that we'll be talking about it today with investing professional Jason Meyer. We're off today, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, joining us again today is Jason Meyer, my good friend and executive director of the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing, an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management and an underwriter of MoneyWise. Jason, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Rob. It's great to be with you again.
Jason, I'm excited about our topic today. It's an intriguing one for sure, and that's thinking about God as an investor. Set this up for us.
You know, one of the unique things about Scripture is that it gives us all of these different ways to think about God. So consider with me some of these. So God as our Father, God as Creator, God as Redeemer or Savior, God as King, God as Judge, God as Physician, God as Shepherd, and we could go on and on.
Sure.
But there's one metaphor for thinking about God that I'm sure almost none of us have ever considered, and that is thinking about God as investor, God as investor. And as strange as that might sound, I want to submit to you that it's a biblical way of thinking about God, and one that actually sheds unique light on God's work in creation and redemption. And even more than that, it sheds light, I think, on our work as investors today.
All right. Well, you certainly have me intrigued. So where in the Bible do we see God as an investor?
In order for us to see it in the Bible, we first have to understand what investing originally meant. So today, we tend to understand investing as, you know, investing our money into companies in order to get, hopefully, a good financial return.
Yeah.
But investing originally had a very different meaning and one that I think is much more profound. Investing originally meant the following, listen carefully, to clothe someone in the official robes of an office. Let me say that again. To clothe someone in the official robes of an office. That's what investing originally meant.
That is interesting. I don't know that I've ever heard that before.
Yeah, I had neither until someone pointed it out to me. So before maybe jumping into the Bible, let me just, since it's so unusual, let me take a moment and just expound on the definition a bit. So first, we see clothing, and investing was related to clothing. And we still have some remnants of this connection today. So if you think about, let's say, a very formal church, the pastor or priest may wear a robe. And that robe is actually called a vestment. So vestment, investing, clothing, you can see the connection there.
Sure.
Or you can think about a three-piece suit, a very formal suit. You have the pants, the jacket, and the what? What's the third piece? It's a vest.
Hmm.
So vest, investing, clothing. So there's still this clothing connection. So clothing is important. Second, investing was to clothe someone else, not to put clothes on yourself, but to clothe someone else. And thirdly, it was specifically work clothing. It was to clothe someone with the official robes of an office for a job. It was work clothing. But don't think here about the lowly work uniform. We're talking about very dignified clothing, robes that signify highly important work. You know, Queen Elizabeth II recently passed away. Think about her robes that signified authority and power related to her office as queen. Yes. That's the idea here. So investing originally meant to clothe someone in the official robes of an office. And as it turns out, this is exactly what we see God doing when he creates humanity in his image. He invests in us in this sense. He clothes us for very specific work. In fact, we can see two kinds of clothes that he gives us for two kinds of work.
This is fascinating, Jason. I'm really intrigued. And just around the corner, we'll unpack this a bit. What are those two kinds of clothes? And what about the two kinds of work? And how does this responsibility even relate to the fall and redemption? Jason Meyer with us today to talk about God as an investor. He's executive director of the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing, an education initiative of Eventide Asset Management. We'll be right back with much more. Stay with us.
On American Family Radio, hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand the urgency and how much fun it is to share your faith through the eyes of a layman. For the first time in human history, every country in the world has lost faith in its leadership and is prepared to accept a single global leader. Meanwhile, the World Economic Forum, with people like George Soros, Bill Gates, and the Pope, are calling for a global vaccine and a global reset or new world order. If that doesn't get your attention, nothing will. Thank God the rapture will happen before any of that takes place. But then, if a new world order is close to happening, how close must the rapture be? And that means time is running out to get your unsaved friends and loved ones into heaven before the rapture happens and they're left behind. That is not an option. If you knew the rapture is happening tomorrow, who would you call today and what would you tell them? Without question, the clock is ticking. There's nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to move people closer to Him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
When it comes to caring for your family, there's one critically important thing many people fail to do before the Lord calls them home. That one thing is to set your house in order. Organize important documents and account information for your loved ones. Create a will and more. If it sounds intimidating, don't worry. The 5-week Set Your House in Order study makes it easy with step-by-step instructions. And you can request your copy with your gift of $25 or more at moneywise.org/house.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Joining me today, my good friend and executive director of the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing, Jason Meyer. We're talking today about a role of God, that is God as an investor. That's right. You may not have heard God referred to in that way, and yet Jason's making an interesting case. He just shared with us the original definition of investing, which meant to clothe someone in the official robes of an office. And he went on to say that we see God doing that when he creates humanity in his image. He invests in us and then clothes us for specific work. Jason, you mentioned two kinds of clothes for two kinds of work. So I'd love for you to share the two kinds of work clothes that God gives to humanity.
So the first is royal clothing, and we can see this in Genesis chapter 1. There's a commissioning ceremony when God creates humanity in his image in Genesis 1, and the language there is royal language. So if you recall, God says, quote, let them rule, or, quote, have dominion over the earth. And it goes on to say, and to subdue the earth. This was the commissioning ceremony for humanity. So rule, dominion, subduing, this is royal language. And what this is describing is God commissioning Adam and Eve to be his vice regents or under rulers, serving as rulers over his creation. Hmm. Now, in Psalm 8, we see King David picking up on this and reflecting on this commissioning ceremony in Genesis 1. And listen to what he says. He says, quote, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you regard him? You've made him a little lower than the heavenly court. Now listen to this. And crowned him with glory and honor and put all things beneath his feet. Crowned him with glory and honor. This is royal language, yeah, depicting the robes of an office that God gives us. And when it says there that he put all things beneath the feet of humanity, this is a reference to a footstool used by a king or a queen. Again, mm-hmm, royal language. God has, yeah, clothed us with royal clothing and granted us authority and power to rule over creation as his chosen representatives. Now, if you're astonished by that, well, you're in good company. So was King David. He says, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you regard him? And so has been every theologian and believer who has ever reflected on what it means to be made in God's image. Part of the meaning of the image is that we were made to be royal stewards over God's beautiful and good creation.
Mm, I love that. So we've been given an awesome responsibility. All right, let's move on for the sake of time. What's the second kind of clothing God gives us?
Right. So we've got the royal clothing. The second is religious clothing. So in Ezekiel 28, we find a very fascinating reflection on Adam in the Garden of Eden. And what we learn there in that passage is that the Garden of Eden was no ordinary garden. It was actually God's dwelling place. It was his holy mountain, his holy temple. And Adam is described there in this passage as the high priest in God's Garden of Eden temple. And what's fascinating about that passage is that it goes on in great detail to describe Adam's clothing. It talks about Adam wearing a gold breastplate with all of these inlaid precious stones lined up in rows. Carnelian, chrysolite and emerald, topaz, onyx and jasper, lapis lazuli, turquoise, beryl. And that might seem really weird unless you know your Old Testament. Because if you studied the temple of God in the Old Testament, you realize that what they're describing is the official robe of the high priest. The high priest wore a long robe, and there was a gold breastplate laid with rows of precious stones. And so in addition to being kings and queens in creation, humanity was also made to be high priests to God, serving God and mediating his divine blessings to the rest of creation. So God invests humanity with royal clothing and religious clothing. And you may be thinking this, but this is why the Bible so often describes God's people as, quote, a royal priesthood,
yeah,
or, quote, a kingly and priestly people. It's because God invested us with his image and gave us authority and power to serve him in both royal and religious ways.
Wow, that's powerful. So then how does, Jason, the fall and redemption play into this idea of investing?
Sure. And this is so cool. You're going to love this. So we know that God made humanity to be his royal priesthood, but almost, yeah, as soon as the commissioning ceremonies were complete, we know that humanity fails and falls into sin.
Right.
But God, in his infinite grace and mercy, invests in humanity yet again. So think about what happens after Adam and Eve sin. They become aware that they're naked, and they try to sew fig leaves together to cover their nakedness. You're already thinking clothing here.
Yeah.
But what does God do? He gives Adam and Eve new clothing. Specifically, he gives them sacrificial clothing. He covers them in the skins of animals, which was the first time that anything was killed in God's peaceful creation. God sacrifices in order to clothe the shame and guilt of Adam's and Eve's transgression. And this sacrificial clothing is, of course, a foreshadowing of the work of Jesus, who sacrificed his own life to cover the guilt of our sin. And the New Testament specifically talks about us being clothed in Christ. And we're instructed to take off the old clothes of the old sinful nature and to put on the new clothes of righteousness in Christ. And so the promise of the Bible is that God's final sacrifice of Christ actually enables us to become the royal priesthood of God yet again. We see this promise in the New Testament and even in the very end of the story, at the end of the age in Revelation. Isn't that just so beautiful?
It really is. So, Jason, then what's the takeaway for financial investing today? You mentioned at the beginning it can really guide our investing. How so?
Yeah. So I think there is a significant takeaway for us as we reflect on financial investing today, even though this clothing metaphor is so foreign to us. Now, if you think about investing today, most investors are really thinking about what they get out of investing, which is the potential for positive financial returns, which is
right.
A good thing.
Yeah.
But as we've been discussing, investing is really much more about clothing someone else for noble work. Not about clothing ourselves, it's about clothing someone else. And with that clothing, empowering them to do good work in the world. And this original meaning of investing about clothing someone else, I think it can remind us of the fact that investing is really about supplying capital to support a business in order for them to be empowered to fulfill their work in the world. Mm. So when we invest our money, I think the way that we should think of it as clothing companies with capital.
Wow.
So that they are enabled to pursue their mission in the world. And if you think about it that way, not only does it sort of reverse the way that we think about investing, but it also gets us thinking about the companies we're investing in. And we should be asking, really, what businesses are doing good work in the world that are worthy to be clothed with this capital?
I love it. Well, that's a lot to think about. Jason, thanks for sharing that with us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Good talking to you, Rob.
You too, buddy. To learn more about faithful investing, check out the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com. And we'll be right back. Stick around.
So they asked me to enter my email address. And the next thing I know, I start getting emails from companies I never even knew existed. What's up with that?
Here at the American Family Association, you have our word that we won't give away, sell, or lease your email address to any other organization or company. We're thankful when you take the time to subscribe to AFA Action Alerts, 1 Million Moms, Engage Magazine, or any of our other online newsletters.
Siri, what's the best way to save for college?
I'm not sure.
Well, what does the Bible say about co-signing for a loan or investing for retirement?
I don't know that either, but you can find those answers on the free MoneyWise app.
Really?
Sure. You can connect with the online community and get answers and encouragement from MoneyWise coaches.
That sounds great. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Got it. Learn more at MoneyWise.org.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
By the grace of God, American Family Association is making a difference.
Bert Harper, co-host of Exploring the Word.
And we have set our face as a flint to stay true to God and His Word.
Contact the AFA Foundation today to learn how you can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Sound Mind Investing helps Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors who are just getting started, those making investment choices for a company retirement plan or college savings account, and people getting close to their retirement years. SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information is at soundmindinvesting.org. The website also features many articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Let's head right back to the phones. Homer, Alaska. Hey, Jimmy, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. You're a popular guy to try to get a hold of, and I appreciate the ministry you can do to everybody. So it means a lot to get on here.
I appreciate it.
Couple questions, a two-part question here. A while back, you were talking about, you know, when someone buys a vehicle, you know, what to watch for so they're not either upside down or, you know, go into a bad investment. And you were talking about values. So my question is, how do you, or what do you recommend, I guess, when someone's buying a car and they're looking at all the options like undercarriage spraying or things like that, so they know what they're buying is not going to be a bad investment if they're planning on keeping it more than a couple years? And the other part of that question is, if someone already has an auto loan, they kind of had an idea what they're buying or already have, how do they transfer that from a personal auto loan to put under their business name and it still being a loan under the business? And how does that benefit you?
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Well, a couple of things there. So just in terms of figuring out if a car is worth the purchase price and the quality of it, I mean, starting with the price, there's a lot of great resources on the web where you can determine both the trade value and the private sale value of an automobile based on the condition, the make, the model, and the the miles that are on the car. I'd look to KBB.com or Edmunds.com to establish that value. That would be a great starting place. Just recognize we're in an unusual season right now where cars are a bit more expensive just because of the pandemic and supply chain issues, but that'd be a great starting place. In terms of finding out whether, you know, something is in good working condition, I would have a mechanic or two that's independent that you select based on a referral from somebody that's a trusted source who's perhaps used them for a long time, give the car a real once over just to give you a good understanding of the condition of, you know, the metal and underneath and, all of the working parts. I mean, these days cars can be hooked up to a computer to determine really kind of what the status of the car is and, you know, whether there's any major concerns that you need to be aware of. But I would absolutely, if you're buying from a private sale where you don't have any kind of warranty, get that type of inspection done with an independent mechanic that's trusted. In terms of, you know, the buying it as a business auto loan, you know, you can certainly have it refinanced in the name of the business. You know, a commercial auto loan is essentially where, you know, perhaps if you're looking to get out from a personal guarantee, you can do that. You know, the idea there is that they have the car or truck as collateral, and so that reduces their risk, oftentimes allowing you not to sign personally. They generally carry lower interest rates than unsecured business loans because of the built-in collateral. You will have to provide some documentation first showing that, you know, you own the company, so business license and registration, EIN, and then probably bank statements, tax returns, profit and loss statement, that type of thing. You may also have to show personal information as well, depending upon whether you're guaranteeing it personally. And then obviously they have the recourse of repossessing. In terms of the benefit to you for doing that is obviously you could make that an expense of the business as if it's legitimately used for business purposes, which then then reduces the amount, perhaps that you're paying to yourself that's taxable, because that becomes an expense of the business. So I would talk to your CPA or accountant about that just to make sure you understand the implications of that and that that's going to prove worthwhile for you financially before you go through the hassle of trying to get it refinanced in the name of the business and all that will come with doing that. Does that make sense?
Yes and no, but I think maybe kind of misunderstood my question, because I didn't know you could refinance from a personal and into the business and doing it that way. And I have an LLC, so I'm a sole proprietor. Yeah. And then the other part, it was when you're looking at a vehicle and evaluating it, I think a while back you had instructed maybe it's not a good idea to have like undercarriage spray or buying add-ons from a dealer. How do you know, like some of those are not a good option to take just to kind of save what you've spent, essentially, because a car is not a really good investment, but if right. you can get the most for your spending, wouldn't it benefit to have, yeah, I would love to have that coated so it lasts an extra 2 years or increases the value of the car, or helps the business bottom line that, yes, now I've got a vehicle that's, say, worth $60,000 that's going to still be worth $60,000 or $70,000 after the couple of years because it's been taken so well care of, or it's got these extra add-ons. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the key is just, are the add-ons worth the cost? And I think, you know, that's where if you go to Consumer Reports, you'll see that a lot of times the extra add-on cost, especially from the dealer, just doesn't pay for itself. These days, you know, cars are made in such a way that if they're maintained properly, you know, you don't necessarily need those extra add-ons that, you know, can be quite costly when you're buying them from the dealership. So I think depending upon what it is, I would just do your research and make sure that you're, you know, really getting the value out of it before you do it yourself. Also, a lot of times you can do things on your own. So, you know, for instance, a popular add-on at a dealership is Scotch guarding, you know, the interior. Well, that's something you can do with a can of Scotch guard, you know. So it's not necessarily always best to go through the dealership when you can do certain things yourself. So I would just make each of these, you know, do your legwork, do your research before you make a decision on a costly add-on and make sure, you know, what you're getting makes sense. It could be that depending on the part of the country you're in, and obviously in Alaska there, you've got some heavy winters. You know, it could be that based on the longevity of what you're hoping to get out of this automobile, that it does in fact make sense for you. So I think that's where you need to do your research and just do a cost-benefit analysis before you make the final decision. Jimmy, I hope that's helpful to you. Thanks for taking the time to be a part of the program today. We appreciate it very much. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a whole line of great questions here as we apply God's wisdom from the Bible to your financial decisions and choices. Thanks for being a part of MoneyWise on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
This week on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg takes a closer look at what happens when Jesus transforms a life. Find out how and why we're saved, and why it's important for us to remember what we were like before our conversion. Listen every day to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have had the procedure I needed without CHM's help sharing the bills. That letter from a member displays Christian Healthcare Ministry's purpose to glorify God and serve His people. CHM is the original non-insurance voluntary health cost-sharing ministry, enabling its members to share the cost of each other's medical bills. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
sometimes you just need a little guidance to help point you in the right direction.
In 300 feet, turn right.
If you're feeling lost when it comes to your finances, we're here to help. You can connect with a trained MoneyWise coach absolutely free. A MoneyWise coach can help you build a personal budget, develop a plan to knock out your debt, and more. Visit MoneyWise.org/connect. That's MoneyWise.org/connect.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. Hey, we decided to extend our special offer a few days to give you an opportunity to get the three-book young reader series called The Secret Slide Money Club from our friend Art Rayner. It's a fun read for ages 8 to 12. Art uses humor and adventure to teach children the foundational principles of financial health, give, save, and live. If you'd like to access this three-book series, you can head to MoneyWise.org, click the Give button at the top of the page, and request your copies with a gift of $25 or more. Sending this resource to you is just our way of saying thanks for your generous support, as MoneyWise Media is a not-for-profit ministry, and we rely on listener support to do what we do and bring you this broadcast each day. Again, MoneyWise.org, and just click Give, and thanks in advance. All right, back to the phones we go to Noblesville, Indiana. Hey, Sheila, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your time. Just sure. Have a couple quick questions. One of them is, I was thinking about combining my credit cards with the Christian counseling and turning it over to them so that I would be getting them paid off quicker and if I have them, I use them. I'm kind of a bad person. If I have them, I use them. So I thought if I did that, that would cut the interest and pay them off quicker. But I'm trying to get my credit score built, and I wondered how much of a negative effect that would have on my credit.
Yeah, it should be minimal, Sheila. First of all, you're not a bad person. There's a lot of folks who really struggle with credit cards. I think recognizing that temptation is something that has been derailing your financial situation is really key. And just acknowledging that that's the case and moving into a program like this, I think would really help you for a couple of reasons. Number one, the accounts would be closed, so we wouldn't use them anymore. Number two, the interest rates will come down, which means more of your payment every month is going to principal reduction. That's key. And it's going to be a level payment. It's not going to decline as the balances decline. You put all that together and you should be able to pay these off 80% faster. As to the credit score, I understand that you want to build that over time. That's not a bad thing. I think the primary objective should be to get out of debt. Now, with regard to the implications with credit counseling and debt management, regardless of which nonprofit you use, there is a minimal impact in the sense that the fact that you're in credit counseling is not a part of the credit scoring algorithms. Where it could affect you is in the closing of the account. So as these accounts are closed, then that limit comes out of the equation, which then changes your credit mix. It changes your credit utilization ratio. And so that could have a minor impact on the credit score. But here's the thing. The reality is, if you get these paid off, get these balances coming down as quickly as you will with debt management, your credit score is going to take care of itself over time. And if you're not out shopping for new loans, that's the least of my concern. So if you're not planning to buy a new house or a new car that's going to require you to qualify for debt, any kind of temporary decline, I think, is going to be minimal. And long term, you being out of debt with regard to these credit card accounts and continuing to be an on-time payer, which you will be, is ultimately going to dramatically improve your credit score. So keeping the big picture in mind, I would say go for it. And ChristianCreditCounselors.org is the trusted resource that we turn to.
I have one more question if you have time.
Yes, ma'am.
It's about a car that I just purchased. And it turned out to be a lemon. I've had it since the end of July. And there's been, I've made the first payment in September, and I've got, or August rather, and I've got the second payment coming due in a couple of days. And I've tried to get out of the car. It's nothing but a lemon. And it's used, and the dealer that I bought it at is taking care of everything. But it's just the fact that it's just one thing after another, after another, after another. And I just feel like I prayed about it and thought I was making a good decision. Turns out I didn't make a good decision. I feel like I got took, and now I've got a car to pay for. And their comeback to me is, we're taking care of everything. By the time it gets all fixed, you'll have a brand new car. And it's got a 2-year, 24,000-mile warranty that comes along with it. But I'm over it.
Yeah, I totally understand. Well, despite our best efforts to make sure we're buying a reliable car that fits within our budget, these things happen. The good news is Indiana, according to what my team is telling me, has a very generous lemon law for cars, and it makes no distinction between new and used cars. So you need to report the problem within 18 months of the ownership of the vehicle. And you take your vehicle to an authorized dealer for repair. It sounds like you've done that. Allow them a reasonable number of attempts to repair it. And a reasonable number means your vehicle is subject to at least 4 repair attempts or is out of service for at least 30 days and the problem still exists. And if that's the case, then the lemon laws could be put into place in your situation. So I think you need to keep good documentation of all these repairs. And if you get to 4 attempts and the problem persists, then, I think at that point you should look at perhaps pursuing the lemon law for this particular vehicle.
It just seems like it's one new thing after another, so that may not qualify as a lemon law.
It may not. The good news is, as you said, you've got the warranty and the dealership is willing to continue to repair it. I understand that's frustrating and it's out of service, which is an additional hassle. But I would certainly keep good records and perhaps do some research on the lemon law yourself and perhaps even be talking to the original manufacturer to see if they can provide any assistance for your situation given this ongoing issue. Hopefully it's just a series of events that you're going to get beyond and then you'll have a good car in working order. Glad to hear you're not coming out of pocket for these things at the very least. That would certainly be more difficult. But as long as you keep fixing it, you have to keep bringing it to them and then keep that documentation. But we appreciate your call today, Sheila. You keep us posted on this situation, and I hope it improves. Let's head to Indianapolis. Kendra, you're next on the program. Go ahead. All right.
Hello?
Yes, you're on MoneyWise Live. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. I don't know if you can hear me well. My phone's being funny.
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Okay. So I'm calling because I'm kind of in the situation where I could have the option to rent a place to live or possibly to buy. I'm just wondering if it's a better decision to find someplace to rent. That's the hard part, though. It's hard to find an economical place to rent. The prices of rent are pretty high.
Absolutely.
Which is why I'm also thinking of buying. The thing is, to avoid PMI, I have excellent credit. My credit's over 800. But if I want to put a good down payment to avoid PMI, I'll probably consider taking money maybe out of my retirement fund because it's not doing that good there anyways.
And my I would caution you against pulling it out of your retirement account, and I would love for you to build up that down payment. Let's do this. I've got to hit a quick break. When we come back, I'll talk about the implications of pulling that money out of your 401k, both in terms of what's going on in the stock market right now, as well as the tax implications of that. And then we'll talk about kind of how you think about preparing to purchase a home and positioning yourself to do that in a way that makes sense financially for you. If you'll just hold the line, Kendra, we'll tackle this just around the corner. We're going to pause for a brief break, but we'll be back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Stick around.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. It's been said that what goes into a mind comes out in a life. In other words, the things that you see and hear, and the private thoughts you allow to occupy your attention, it all eventually becomes known in your words and in your deeds. That's why Paul said, "Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, think about such things." It's not the power of positive thinking. It's the benefit of obedience to Jesus. Because when you fill your mind with His truth, your relationship deepens with the one who said, "I am the truth." Would you like to spend time with Him more consistently? Anchor Devotional can help you spend more time with Him every day. Get it in print monthly. Visit getanchor.com.
If you enjoy this radio program, you will love all of the many different resources waiting for you at moneywise.org. You'll find more powerful wisdom, podcasts, articles, videos, and more from partners like the National Christian Foundation, Sound Mind Investing, and Christian Healthcare Ministries. Connect with a community of thousands of Christians striving to be faithful stewards, and check out all of the free biblical financial advice at moneywise.org.
Sound Mind Investing offers investing guidance grounded in the stewardship principles found in Scripture. Since 1990, SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire knowledge and confidence related to investing and overall money management. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a wise and faithful steward in the area of investing. More information about SMI and its approach to financial wisdom for living well is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. I'm Rob West, your host. Thanks for being along with us. Just before the break, we were talking with Kendra in Indianapolis. She's in her 40s. She's looking to buy a house or rent, trying to determine what the best approach is for her. She doesn't have a down payment, and so she would be looking to avoid PMI by pulling the money out of her 401k and wondering, with the market not doing well, is that a good idea? Kendra, let me ask, is this your first home purchase? Would you be a first-time home buyer?
No, actually.
Okay. All right. So, you know, the downside here is I'm not a big fan of pulling out of a 401k. It's just expensive money. I mean, there is an exclusion on the penalty if you're a first-time home buyer up to $10,000. But if that's not the case, you'd have the 10% penalty if you're under 59 and a half. Plus, it would all be added to your taxable income, which could push a portion of this up into a higher tax bracket. Not to mention those unrealized losses that you've experienced, like everybody else with the market under so much pressure right now, will be locked in. They'll be realized. So you'd no longer have the ability for that money to recover over time. And I believe it absolutely will. I mean, even though we're under a lot of pressure right now and the headwinds continue with inflation being, you know, a hot topic because it's real. I mean, the Fed was talking about it, got another 0.75 interest rate hike with more to come just because the Fed is so focused on fighting inflation. That plus a number of other issues
issues are going to weigh on this economy for the foreseeable future, and the market will struggle. Now, the market will eventually recover, and it will recover probably 6 months or so before the actual economy recovers, because the market tends to look out 6 months or more, and we'll start to see signs that the economy is going to recover and the market will take off. And when it does, I think all those losses you've experienced will recover, and we could very likely enter into another bull market like we had for the last dozen years before this one. And with you being in your 40s, you've got time on your side. You've got a minimum of a 20-year runway, I would say, until you're thinking about using this money in retirement. So you have the opportunity for this to rebound and then grow for the future. And so locking in those losses and adding to the tax bite with the penalty plus the making all this taxable income from the year for the year, I don't think makes sense. So what do you do in the wake of that? Well, there's not a great option because, as you said, rental prices are high, but that doesn't, I think, provide an excuse for buying a home before you're ready. I would, even with these high rental prices, still rather see you rent and do the best you can to save as much as you can so you can actually go in with that 20% down payment. And I would make sure that your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payment on the mortgage that you get after you put 20% down is no more than 25% of your take-home pay. And I think that's going to be challenging, but if you do that, it's going to ensure that you have enough left over for everything else and to have some margin to accomplish your goals. But that probably means you're going to have to push this home purchase down the road quite a bit. Give me your thoughts on all that, though.
Yeah, I think so. I'm just trying to find, a good price on rent.
Yeah.
And that's
that's certainly challenging. Now, the housing market is changing. We're starting to see it cooling a bit on home purchases, which is going to eventually trickle down into the rental market, especially as the economy, continues on this course. If we slip into a recession and we start to see, not as good of labor numbers, unemployment creeps up. I mean, all these things are going to cause the housing market to soften, not to mention what's going on with mortgage interest rates right now. So it could be that you get into a 12-month lease and, it's a whole new ballgame 12 months from now. I think the key is positioning yourself to live well within your means so you have money left over to save and do that diligently and see if you can build up enough for that down payment, perhaps a couple of years down the road. So I realize that's probably not what you were looking for, but I think you'll be glad that you did rather than maybe pushing ahead a little prematurely and perhaps regretting that you did so. I appreciate your call today. Thanks for being a part of the program. Tampa, Florida, Greg, you're next up, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Yes, I had a question concerning my situation. My wife passed away last year, August. So it's just been a little over a year. We had life insurance, which I thank God I had that, but she had a 401k with her job, and she also had the life insurance policy through her job. So I've received that, but I'm just trying to figure out for myself right now, because I don't have a 401k with my job. We have no benefits. The only thing my job offers me is insurance, and that's it. And vacation. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to find out what's the best way to invest the money that I have received. It's not much. $18,000 from the 401k and another, I think it was $20,000 from the life insurance policy that the job gave.
Sure. Yeah. And what is your age, Greg?
I'll be 60 in December.
Okay. All right. And are you planning to work for some time, or do you have kind of a target date for retirement?
Yeah, I'm currently working right now at my job. I've been there 28 years. And I was hoping to be able to work another 2 years to give them an even 30. But because there's no benefits and a lot of things are changing, we have coming under new management. It's a family-ran business, but things are just changing, and the atmosphere is not the same as it was when I was able to, you know, be there in better conditions. And it's getting the vibe is getting bad. The tension there is bad. It's stressful.
Sure. Yeah, Greg, what assets would you be looking to fund your retirement? I mean, you've got this $20,000 life insurance proceeds, the $18,000 in the 401k. Are there any other assets that you would have access to in retirement?
Well, the only thing I have is the life insurance policy that we had, and thank God we had taken that out. I mean, it was literally like 2 years prior to her passing that we...
What are the proceeds from that?
It was $250,000.
Okay.
And they put $127,000 in for my that went into the Bright House. It's the insurance agent that I had. And I'm this is all just, I mean, I'm not literate at all when it comes to investing.
Yeah. Okay. And so yeah, let me suggest you do this, Greg, because I think there's a lot of moving pieces here, and obviously you need to be well-planned, and I think that's where you need to start. Before anybody takes over investing this money, I think you need to do some planning with a trusted advisor. I'd recommend you go to our website at moneywise.org, click Find a CKA, look for I would say 2 to 3 certified Kingdom advisors there in Tampa to visit with. Start with some planning to look at what are the assets that you have, the life insurance proceeds, plus this 401k, look at how that needs to be managed in light of when you're looking to retire. They'll want to do some cash flow planning and budget planning to determine what will your expenses be in retirement. And if you're looking to retire prior to when it makes sense for you to start collecting Social Security, then I think the key is, you know, you have to determine whether the assets you have will support that, or perhaps if you retire from this current job, you need to be looking to going back to work somewhere else so that you can cover your bills, let this life insurance proceeds continue to grow, let the 401k continue to grow, and until such point where it makes sense for you to begin collecting Social Security on your own work record. But all of that requires planning, and then based on that plan, an investment strategy that will come out of it. But it would be premature for me to try to recommend what that should look like without understanding all the pieces that you have going on here. I think, Greg, that'll give you a lot more peace of mind to know that you've got somebody that you know, could be helping you look at all of this. So head to our website, moneywise.org, and click Find a CKA, and let's start there. And if we can help further along the way, let us know. So sorry to hear about your wife's passing, my friend, and thanks for calling today. God bless you. Quickly to Florida, Ed, thank you for calling. I've got just about a minute left. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Rob. So I have two questions, but it seems like I'm going to ask one.
Okay.
So it's about life insurance. I would like to set up a life insurance that include in cash value, but I'm not sure. I know there's a different type of life insurance. I am 37 now, so thank God, so I have no medical issues. So I would like to get your opinion regarding which life insurance I should get, or yes, any advice.
And why are you thinking you'd want to add a savings component to the life insurance?
Because I'm thinking, like, I do a little reading regarding life insurance. Like, if I need to borrow from it in the future based off the cash value, so I'm not really sure how that works. So that's why I'm calling if you can give me some advice.
I'm gonna offer you an alternative to that. I would prefer you to go with term insurance. That's pure insurance, which you're gonna get very inexpensive as a healthy 37-year-old. It'll allow you to get the enough insurance, which would probably be 10 to 15 times your salary, payable to your wife, if that's who would be left with a hardship if you passed. And then do your savings through a company-sponsored retirement plan, your 401k, or an IRA, as opposed to trying to mix your savings and your insurance. That's just going to be my preferred option for you, Ed, especially as a healthy young man. We appreciate your call. Hey, let me say thanks to my team today. So thankful for Pat Montague handling our phones today, Mr. Jim Henry handling our research today, and Devin Patrick, our engineer and producer. Thank you for being along with us as well. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll do it all over again. In the meantime, may God bless you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.